Since we have been looking at Exodus chapter 32 and what we've seen in that chapter about the golden calf worship and what I brought the last time about the dancing and the obvious music, the singing that was taking place, I wanted to bring something again tonight as an opportunity to talk about the music. And so I would like us to go to Colossians chapter 3. And we'll be noting tonight verse 16, Colossians 3:16, a passage that you know very well. I was reading once a book that was asking this question. It actually made this statement, and the statement was, we would have never made it. We would have never made it. The Oregon Trail, that is. We would have never made it. Why? There was no music along the way. Think about it. The prairie schooners had no CD players. There was no earphones. No concerts along the way. No headsets, no iPods, no MP3 players. We would have never made it. Everybody's plugged in today. Wherever you go, people have buds in their ears. And you say hello to people and they walk right on by you. They don't even acknowledge that you're there because everybody's in their own little world and it's their world of music. Actually, we never would have made it just 100 years ago anywhere, let alone upon a deserted trail. We just wouldn't have made it. When was the radio invented? When did they come out with the radio? Wasn't it in the late 1920s? We would have never made it. Imagine one of the few places people could hear music and even participate was where? In your church. And music was this wonderful time of worship where you could come apart from the world having heard no music from the world, where you could literally come into the church and with joy you could sing praises to the God of heaven. It always disconcerts me when I stand up here and as we're singing and I literally see people who stand there and they don't even look at the hymnal. It's not that you have to have hymnal. Some people have it memorized, and that's great. But I mean people with their mouth shut, and they're just standing there with a frown on their face. Folks, I don't understand that. Here's the opportunity to worship God. Amen. And they sing nothing. The music in those churches was always vocal. And if fortunate, you had an organ, a piano. We look back upon our forefathers very critically. And yet think about it, they were so much further ahead than we are. Whereas they looked forward to the singing and the music, we come to church tired of music. Why? Because it's a large part of our everyday lives. It's included in absolutely everything. Music is not only in videos, it's audio, it's in commercials. We shop to it, we eat to it, we drive to it. Think about it, music is everywhere. We're bombarded with it. So we come to church tired of music because it's in every area of our life. And we compare the music we've heard all week to the music in church. And who is going to win? Because you know, when you come to church, the music and the singing just doesn't match that professional you just heard. And so, if we compare our church music to all the other music we choose to hear, it simply cannot compete. What is it that can't compete Is it the lyrics, the words? Or is it the style that cannot compete? We wouldn't say it's the lyrics because you would almost gasp to say that any words could excel what you see written in "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." How can you beat lyrics? I mean, wow, the tremendous message in those words. So it's not the words, folks, it's the music. It's the style. Somebody once said, there was a book written some years ago by a man by the name of Gordon. It was entitled, "Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns." Has anybody ever read that? Has anybody heard of it? "Why Johnny Can't Read Hymns." I read that years ago. And the author said this, "The lyrics of a hymn might say, holy, 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 but the music might say, ho hum, ho hum, ho hum." You see, that's what people think of when they think of the music like that. Even the unsaved recognize cheap style. So instead of coming to church enthused about getting to sing, people come dreading because they have to sing. You know, when we compare our church, and I'm talking about the church of today, I'm not talking about Westside, I'm talking about the church today with the church of 75 years ago. When you think about it, folks, they were so much further ahead. And you know, you go back 200 years to a little church out there on the prairie, they were so much further ahead. And yet we think that we are rich and increased with goods and we have need of nothing. Because we can just bring the music in, whatever the music is, you know, it's here. And if there's nobody in the church who can sing, well, we can play it over the speakers and we can sing to some kind of a, you know, a tape. Not even a tape, but a CD, just a flash drive, you know. So worship is all about us now. And you're the audience, not God. There's two dimensions to music that we should concern ourselves with at church. And I think this will make sense when you hear it. There's the vertical dimension and the horizontal dimension that we even see here in Colossians 3:16. Think about the vertical dimension. Let's read Colossians 3:16. "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing." Here's the horizontal dimension, "one another. In psalms and hymns and spiritual songs." Here's the vertical, "singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord." So my music vertically ought to be a sound of praise to God. A singular audience needs to be pleased with my music. Psalm 105, verse 2, "Sing unto him, sing psalms unto him." So I ought to be very careful what I sing to him. My music, even its style, should exalt him. That's the vertical dimension. Then there's the horizontal dimension. Not only should my music exalt the Lord, it should edify the believer. "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly." Let's personalize this. "Let the word of Christ dwell in me richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in my heart to the Lord." Have you ever had your devotions that way where instead of reading the plurals, you read it in the singular and make it the first person? It's me and how I challenge you that this week, if you get to passages that you read it in the first person singular, and this is talking about me, and read it that way. So if you were to read, again, Colossians 3:16, read it with me. Let's personalize it like I just did. "Let the word of Christ dwell in me richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in my heart to the Lord." You've personalized it. You've applied it to yourself. So note, even when I am singing, to teach and admonish one another, I should be singing with grace in my heart to the Lord. So there's the vertical and there's the horizontal dimension. Here's the thing. Does my singing edify other believers? Do I even sing? Folks, when the worship service begins, that's the time that all talking ceases. I've got to say this to someone. Put it off. Sing. That's part of the worship. Let's sing together. Do you even sing congregationally? Do you join with others? Remember the What in the Worlds that used to be produced by BJU? There was something in there years ago. This is from something in 2008. Quote, I'm at the point of despair with congregational singing, end quote, writes Michael Reiter in The Briefing, an international evangelical monthly. Quote, in many churches, genuine heartfelt congregational singing has been in its death throes for some years now. I was at a convention recently, says Reiter. The music team at the front was, puts it in quotes, leading, and we were singing. Well, we were meant to be singing, and so I did what I've done quite often lately. I closed my eyes and listened to the singing. The song leaders with their microphones were clear and distinct. I could identify each of the several instruments accompanying the singers. But if you blocked out the worship team, in quotes, all that was left around the building was barely an audible murmur. I opened my eyes and looked around. Most folks were either standing silently, not even making a pretense of singing, or were little engaged in the activity. Reiter's travels take him to a different church almost every Sunday, and he says he sees this phenomenon nearly everywhere he goes. The music teams are killing congregational singing, he says. To make the situation worse, he says, in the urban areas of Asia, Africa, North America, or Australia, everywhere you go, increasingly the singing in the church, both the songs that are sung and the style of music is the same. Reiter urges Christians to remember two dimensions of music in the Bible, the vertical, making melody in your heart to the Lord, and the horizontal, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. You know what we need here is a worship team. Well, you know, when people aren't singing, let's get somebody who's going to do the sing, right? You know, if something's not working, then we've got to come up with something to get people involved, and so let's have a worship team, and then people, nobody gets involved because the worship team is doing everything. Music is having a tremendous impact in churches. David Gordon in that book writes, in the book Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns, how pop culture rewrote the hymnal. When he was in seminary working on his doctorate, a friend proposed this challenge to him. I thought this was really interesting. His friend said, David, you write the systematic theologies, I'll write the hymnals, and we'll see who influences the church more. The editors of the Old Trinity Hymnal said it in the preface, quote, it is well known that the character of its song, almost equal with the character of its preaching, controls the theology of a church. In a critique of evangelicals who claim to want to defend traditional morality but contradict it by the very music they employ, that was said. And I read something called Evangelicals on the Durham Trail by D.G. Hart. Quote, judging on the basis of worship services, evangelicals look the most hypocritical. For 6 days a week, they trumpet traditional values and the heritage of the West, but on Sunday, they turn out to be the most novel. Indeed, the patterns of worship that prevail in most evangelical congregations suggest that these Protestants are no more interested in tradition than their arch enemies in the academy. I don't know if you're picking up on that, but you know, we're decrying what's taking place in the academies and the universities and so forth. And we're saying, man, I'm getting liberal. Well, what's happening in the church? He goes on to say on page 3, that was page 2, as in the case of the cultural left, We are seeing a generation which grew up on TV and top 40 radio stations now assuming positions of leadership in the churches. And what they want to surround themselves with in worship, as in the classroom, is what is familiar and easily accessible. Rather than growing up and adopting the broader range of experience which characterizes adulthood, evangelicals in the academic left want to recover and perpetuate the experiences of adolescence. He closes this way, or at least I'm closing. Just as the academic left has abandoned the great works of Western civilization because of a desire for relevance in higher education, so evangelicals have rejected the various elements and forms which have historically informed Protestant worship, again, because they are boring to today's youth. And so, people are saying, they are advertising, this is not your grandfather's church. So that we'll bring the masses of the young people in. And I would like to say, you know what, Westside Baptist Church is your grandfather's church. And I would like to say that and be unapologetic about it. That doesn't mean that we don't have technology. And we don't use the things that God has allowed men to discover. But it does mean that we will not allow it to change who God is and in the way we worship Him. Where we change the worship to appeal to the congregation rather than to worship God. Now going back to Exodus chapter 32, in our minds, I'm not even going to turn there, I'm just saying, when you go back to Exodus 32, they were adopting, and if you go back to the adult Bible class, as in this morning, as we're talking about how we're trying to seamlessly blend, in with this world and what they're doing, and we're bringing that into our churches, that's what they were doing in Exodus. They had brought Egypt with them as they came out. The worship of the golden calf was something that was taking place in Egypt, all the gods that they had. And so as we think about what is taking place in Exodus chapter 32, when Moses is on the mount, and he, in the blissful time he is having up there on the mount with God. And God says, Moses, go down. They have corrupted themselves. It is just so significant that music was a part of it. And I have to stress this because there is this idea today that music is this thing you don't touch. It's a neutral thing. It's something that is not moral or immoral. It's just amoral. And folks, it is either moral or immoral. Amen. Just like art is either moral or immoral. It's either pornography, it's something that is really good. The fine arts have a morality to them. And yet we dismiss them as something, well, that's just your opinion and that's your taste. No, there are standards of beauty. You can talk to Rod about that, about art and what you see and what's on the paint. You know, I mean, Rod and I've had this discussion before about art that is, what do they call that art that we're just throw something up there? Abstract. I'm like, people stand there and go, ooh, you know what that means to me? Yeah, you don't have any education in art, man. You don't know what you're doing. I when I see art, I like see something Rod paints and go, wow, that is beautiful. How do you do that? That there is talent there. And God-given talent to do something. And the music ought to be the same. It's one of the fine arts. And folks, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in my heart to the Lord. Do you have that verse memorized? I wasn't sure I did until I just quoted it. I know I've memorized it in the past, but did I get through it right? I don't even know. Let the word of Christ, let's say it together, let's personalize it again. Let the word of Christ dwell in me richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in my heart to the Lord. Well, now you have the opportunity once again to do so. This Brother Dave is going to come and lead us in our closing hymn. Now, let's do that. Let's practice what we've just heard tonight, that I am going to sing with grace in my heart to the Lord, even while I'm admonishing other people. as we sing. So he'll lead us in this closing song, and then I'll come back and we'll pray and be dismissed. Brother Dave.